We are going to now discuss goodwill and impairment. We have six papers, that's a reading material. Michelle will lead us through the main issues, and I think we should try to focus our discussion on amortization and impairment. Michelle.
Okay, in this project we're looking at three interrelated areas or topics, and these topics are accounting for goodwill, impairment testing requirements in IAS 36, and identification of intangible assets in a business combination. Now, the objective of the meeting today is to give you an update on our discussions so far in the project and ask for your feedback on the initial discussions and any other advice you have on the way forward with the project. Now, as we only have an hour today, I think it may be better to focus on the types of approaches being considered for the three topics and the general direction of the project, rather than spending too long debating the merits of individual approaches. Now, the ISB had initial discussions on the three topics covered by the project at its October and November meetings, and the paper for these two meetings are provided in ASAF papers 5A to 5F. However, the ISB has not had any decision-making meetings yet. This is firstly because of the interrelations between the three issues and the need to fully discuss the three issues before taking decisions in one area, and also because the FASB has similar projects on its agenda, and we've heard strong support to remain converged where possible. And we think the best way to do this would be for decisions to be taken jointly with the FASB. So now the ISB has had initial discussions in October and November, the staff envisage that the next steps will be for the ISB to consider any feedback we get from the ASAF today, and also consider if there's anything else we need to do before having discussions with the FASB. So I think the best structure for this meeting may be for me to start by giving a quick summary of the October papers, and then having a discussion on the October papers, and then move on to the November ones. So this was the structure that we did for the ISB. So I'll start with the ISB October papers and their papers 5B and 5C for the ASAF meeting. In paper 5A on subsequent accounting for goodwill, the staff analysed four possible approaches. The first was an amortisation with impairment approach, the second accounting for the separate components of goodwill, the third, direct write-off of goodwill, and the fourth one, no change to the accounting requirements for goodwill, but instead focus on ways to improve the impairment test. Now, based on initial discussions, I think the ISB and the FASB seem to be more focused on either approach one, which is the amortisation, or approach four, to focus on the impairment test. Now, under all of the four approaches, we'd still need to consider improvements to the impairment test. But obviously, under some of the approaches, the perceived concerns about the impairment test would be lessened. Agenda paper 5B sets out the suggestions of the staff for improving the impairment test. And they're considering whether the recoverable amount should be determined based on one model rather than two, considering an indicator-only approach rather than an annual impairment test. Also looking at addressing the concerns that we've heard about calculation in value and use, for example, removing the requirement to use the pre-tax discount rate. Another alternative would be considering developing education material, perhaps on things like allocation of goodwill to cash generating units, and also looking at the disclosures in IAS 36. So for example, improving or streamlining the disclosures. We've also considered whether it would be helpful to have a disclosure comparing the actual performance to the expected performance. So do ASAF members have any comments on the approaches being considered for subsequent accounting for goodwill and impairment in Agenda Papers 5A and 5B?
Yukio.
thank you. First, I'd like to comment on the subsequent accounting for goodwill. We strongly believe that the ISB should move forward to the standard setting project with a view to replace the current impairment-only approach with the amortization and the impairment approach. Primarily, we have six reasons. The first, with regard to subsequent accounting of goodwill, the ISV has already received a great number of feedback, such as those, through post-implementation review and joint publication of the discussion paper by the ASBJ, IFRAG, and OIC. So we think additional evidence is unnecessary to consider the possible changes. Second, under the impairment-only approach, an entity would effectively result in recognizing internally generated goodwill. In addition, that approach would fail to allocate the cost of investment at business combination over the period for which the goodwill will have an effect. Third, often amortization of goodwill is criticized for the challenges of estimating appropriate amortization period. However, the impairment testing also entails subjective judgment in determining input used in the valuation. Thus, if the accounting standard prescribes the upper limit of the amortization period, the degree of subjectivity is lower under the amortization and impairment approach than impairment-only approach. Fourth, some pointed out that the impairment-only approach was introduced only recently, and it may be too early to review the requirement. However, about 10 years have already passed, and it's not too early to reconsider the accounting requirement. Fifth, some maintain that impairment-only approach is superior, citing that youth are opposed to reintroduction of amortization. However, we have heard support for the amortization and impairment approach, at least from users in Japan. Lastly, goodwill balance has been accumulated significantly over the last 10 years, and some pointed out data that indicates goodwill balances in many entities are even larger than their equity balances. So considering the impact of this accounting requirement on the entity's behavior, we believe it's not too early to undertake a standard setting project to fix the problem. In addition, we believe it important for the ISB to work with the FASB because the accounting requirement of goodwill acquired in business combinations are expected to have a significant impact on an entity's financial information, and maintaining the common accounting requirement would be very helpful for users of financial information.
Jim? So I think a little context on what we've done, because we have moved forward on impairment-only improvements. And so just so people understand, we don't feel that that is moving in a way that would result in divergence, because we're not converged today on the impairment approach. We require a second step if you conclude you fail step one in the impairment to do a hypothetical purchase price allocation, which people have said is exceedingly costly. You go through and fair value all of your assets and liabilities, including unrecognized one, to derive the value of goodwill. And so what we're proposing is to eliminate that, which would be then more in line with IFRS. We haven't proposed to move to then the higher of value in use versus fair value minus cost to sell. Right now we're at closer to a fair value, so that piece wouldn't be aligned, but in total we would be closer to IFRS. But I don't think that should necessarily signal that that's all that the FASB would like to do, and so we appreciate that discussing together, because we would be even further converged, what to do next. I would suspect individually a majority of our board maybe would be at impairment, but it would be very, a very close, maybe would be at amortization with improved impairment, but that would be a thin majority, and it would probably depend on at least some board members whether we could come up with a more meaningful amortization period, which might be the search for a holy grail. And so it would be a very close call if we acted unilaterally, and I think we believe that the input we would likely get, because people can't agree, is whatever we do, we should work with the IASB. So I think there, from our perspective, certainly there is strength in operating together. One of the questions I have on the research, or whether we ought to be thinking about, is a more concrete assessment of what is the absolute cost of complying with the standards today to inform, even if it was improvement only to impairment, what is the cost that entities incur vis-a-vis the actual value derived? So if investors are only getting sort of a confirmatory value of prices they're already using, and if that's at a significantly high cost, does that really justify the accounting outcome, or should we be more ambitious in terms of the improvement or the cost reductions? And I don't know the answer to that. I look at a research report that was put out, and it's dated, but it was entitled Financial Reporting for the 90s and Beyond, done by a predecessor to the CFA, so the AIMR, which included Pat McConnell and Tony Cope, others, that said effectively it isn't the accountant's job to determine the value of goodwill, that's the investor's job. And if you believe that, it would lead you to say we ought to then try and find a simpler way. Now, their solution was one that I think you said neither board is really pursuing, which is direct write-off, but that wasn't just theirs, that was the CFA's suggestion. Now, somewhat dated, but if you take that as sort of one data point of investors really believe it's their job to determine enterprise value, we might be able to be more ambitious in thinking about, can we deal with the overall accounting for goodwill in a more simple manner.
Except that in a takeover situation, there is actually, for the first time, a real market value for it.
Oh, and I wasn't suggesting to go to direct write-off, but if they're saying it's really their job, can we figure out how to have accountants spend less money and let investors?
Yeah. Patrick?
I have six reasons, too. to suggest to consider seriously solution four. The first one is that neither solution one nor solution four are perfect. There is no ideal solution. I mean, we've been hearing pros and cons for the two systems constantly, and we are arguing about that. It looks like, you know, as if we were in church about the existence of God or something like that. So it's complex. Second reason is that there is always, and that's more, there is always a criticism developing on the treatment that is applicable at a point in time. I remember vividly the discussions 20 years ago about how stupid it was to amortize over 40 years, blah, 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 etc. I think only the very old ones like me can remember that, but that's, for me, that's something that is, sorry. Only the only ones like Ian and me can remember that. So you have to be careful.
You have to be careful.
Point three. As a consequence, people hesitate, and this is natural. This explains why people evolve sometimes. And this is the case for ANC. I know that in the past ANC expressed the idea that amortization would be better, but now, on balance, we have changed a little bit. So I know there are discussions that has by FASB level, discussed with Tom, I remember, in Dubai at this point. And so we have to be careful. People can evolve. Point four, This is why we should be extremely careful about changing, because Jim, finding the Holy Grail is impossible, just impossible. So, you know, changing from a solution that's not perfect to a solution that is not perfect,
yeah,
is a huge cost and would be extremely significant on the market. Because I can tell you, if you want the headlines, you're going to get the headlines. But is it worth it? Is it a good idea to create the headlines on such a topic today? And I have two more reasons, because I said I had six. So the fifth one is that, and that's my personal observation. As you know, I was not too long ago still in practice in spite of my old age. Impairment techniques, the reliability of impairment techniques, the governance approval, you know, this is in my experience of audit committees. You know, in audit committees, you probably spend half of the time discussing impairment. You know, the auditors explaining, the management explaining, and finally the independent board members saying, okay, we go with it or we don't. And there is a serious discussion at board level following the audit committees. So governance approval has progressed tremendously. And transparency too. Is it perfect? No. Is it converged? No. You were right mentioning that. So in the solution for impairment is not just something that is done, you know, on the corner of a table in 5 minutes just before the board or before the closing of the books. It's a very serious exercise that is being carried out with all the seriousness of governance and all the transparency of financial information. And the sixth point is for me something that I keep asking myself about. At a time when there is a disconnect between book values and market valuations, is it the right time to increase the difference? I'm really asking myself, are we not about to create a further disconnect and therefore create the financial information as some sort of interesting exercise, but without any linkage with reality? And okay, it's great words, I agree, but nevertheless a concern. That's my sixth reason for asking respectfully this audience to consider very seriously before changing.
Ian?
Two members in AOSC, Hong Kong and Korea, believe that the current impairment-only approach conceptually provides more relevant information to primary users. However, based on the feedback of PIR of IFRS 3 and recent feedback in practice, they suggest that the ISB should reconsider the approach of goodwill subsequent accounting treatment in terms of maintaining the balance between cost and benefit.
So I didn't quite get this. There were a couple of countries who said keep it as it is and others that didn't, or
The two members suggest ISB should reconsider the fundamentally this goodwill subsequent accounting treatment project.
These were Japan and
Hong Kong, Korea.
What's the meaning of reconsider? Reconsider and change, or just have a look and say
improve,
no change?
improve
impairment, of course, but
impairment.
What's the direction of this reconsideration? What is the expected outcome? They want us to change, or?
Japan, certainly.
Yeah. Oh, no, for Japan, yeah.
Chris.
So in respect of amortizing goodwill, Australia and New Zealand haven't found enough evidence at this point to suggest that it should be returned to amortization of goodwill. We haven't found any users that would actually support that move. The preparer community is mixed views from the ones that we've spoken to. Some directors have said absolutely no way should you write off goodwill when you've just spent money and you clearly believe there's value to it. But of course there are some others who think it's just an easier approach. So we'd support moving with option four at this stage, because we think whichever way you go, you need to do that, and that would be a more valuable outcome to go there. Do you want comments on the second question?
Yes, on the second paper, on the impairment paper.
Yeah. We haven't had enough outreach to really form a definite view. So what we would say is we think there's merit in pursuing whether or not one methodology is the right way to go, but we think you'd probably need to just keep a bit of a dual track at this stage. So I must admit, personally, when I read the papers, I wasn't persuaded that value in use, because of the changes that we've made to IFRS 13 about fair value actually being the highest and best use, I'm not sure that value in use actually does give you anything over and above that, because presumably if it's better to hold it, then that should be coming out in your fair value assessments as well. So then your only consideration is whether or not the entity's got better information than the market. And certainly at least we have some regulators who are saying that's very problematic in terms of trying to assess the reasonableness of what people have actually put into some of those calculations. So I think there's certainly some merit in looking at least one methodology. But give you more specific comments later.
So just a few comments from our jurisdiction. We certainly think this is, business combinations are very important. It always ranks with our securities regulators when they do continuous disclosure reviews. Very big notion that to the extent the ISB and the FASB are converged, it's very important to stay as converged as possible. In terms of the annual impairment test, we pulled some disclosure to see what companies were actually doing. And in our sample, we found out that 80% of the companies actually disclose an impairment in conjunction with their annual impairment test, as opposed to any other time. So that would lend some evidence towards being concerned about removing the annual impairment review, or alternatively, make it much clearer what it is, a triggering event or an indicator of an impairment, so that companies are doing potentially a better job of monitoring that. So that's what we found in terms of our disclosures. No support from our users relative that amortization is useful. Our users are very close to what you had in the papers, that they find the fact that an impairment has happened useful information. They tend to discount the amount because they're looking forward. Nothing in our jurisdiction that would say that we would be supporting going back to amortization. And by the way, I'm old enough to remember when we were amortizing too, so that always makes me cranky. But anyway, in terms of fair value less cost to dispose or value in use, my experience has been, and when I talk to others similar, that in our jurisdiction there seems to be a lot of rigor put into place whether they are they can reach a conclusion with fair value or they have to move on to value in use. So we sort of have less of a notion that value in use is so jaded by management's perspective. The thing they complain about the most actually is trying to interpret the guidance in IFRS to figure out how to modify the cash flows, because they feel that that's fairly subjective. So they struggle with that. But certainly the comment that I've gotten back very strongly is much more support for one test as opposed to having two tests that are trying to coexist. The other thing, which is a personal comment, the papers talked a fair amount, well, I don't know if you want to go on to this, about the identification of other intangibles. Do you want me to wait?
I'll probably deal with those separately.
Okay. All right.
Andreas?
Thanks, Hans. I think that most of the comments that have been made already seem to resonate what we see in Germany. I think whatever you do, you probably miss half of your constituency either way. So either you change or you don't change, so you will always annoy the other half. And I think that's quite true of Germany as well. From what I sense is, if you look into the top DAX companies, they probably are split, depending probably on their individual situation as to how much goodwill they have been sitting on their balance sheet. And if you apply direct write-off to them, it may be the last double bookkeeping entry for some of them. But if you go further down, then probably there is a tendency towards amortization. And that may be purely because that's what people have learned, that what they have known. But I should mention that in Germany, we had direct write-off against reserves for a number of times. So we are used to that. As a personal comment, I would very much echo what Jim has said in terms of looking more into the benefits that users derive out of that. Because I sometimes have the suspicion that they derive benefits that they really infer into the calculation, but that may not be there. So especially the notion of overpayment, I think to me is really a non-starter, because I've not come across a single entity that has ever paid an amount that reflects the true or the fair acquisition price. I mean, that's the starting point, but if you are in a bidding process, I mean, you're most likely to pay more than that to then reconcile that, do a purchase price allocation and say for exactly which asset you overpaid. I think to me it's just nonsensical to start with. So I see the indication point that yes, if an impairment has happened, it does show something, it does signal something, and I accept that. But as to the precise amount, the calculation that comes with it, I have significant doubts.
Tommaso?
I think we share many of the 6 points raised by the Japanese colleagues, although I want to say that I agree with Patrick that there are pros and cons in both the solutions. Therefore, we believe that it has merits to explore whether amortization could be introduced, at least to verify whether the issues related of the concerns related at the time in which IFRS 3 was reviewed are overcome. And I want to list some points that I think should be dealt with in the project. One thing is whether the discontinuing of amortization has created in the years competitive advantages or disadvantages among entities. Because of the arguments of internally generated goodwill, there are entities who has recognized it, others not, and this is an issue of comparability. And as far as I had the opportunity to see some data, I saw an increase in the years of the ratio between goodwill and equity. It's really a rough ratio that could be explained in a number of ways, but I think that a project on this area could better understand it. And also, I agree with James and Andreas that the concerns of users should be investigated. From this point of view, I think that many users claim that impairment all information is useful also for a stewardship objective. I would also say that if an amortization period is identified and maybe related, for example, to the payback period, it could be a useful information for users as well, as far as I have been told from users. This is because they know exactly how management see the return period of the investment at the time the investment was done. And also another point that needs to be tackled is about the separate recognition of intangible assets. And I agree with many of the studies that have been done in the last year, especially from the FRC, that some intangibles separated in a business combination are not useful for users and are costly for preparers, if we want to consider to reinstall these intangible in the goodwill concept, I think that it could have merits also to rediscuss about whether these figures should be amortized or not. And the last point I want to raise is about convergence. I think that a solution that could be found should be as much as possible in line with what FASB is doing as much as possible. And also considering that FASB, therefore, under US GAAP, impairment is not mandatory, of course, it's not mandatory yearly, but there is a test of consider indicators whether impairment should be performed or not. So that could be a reduction of cost for preparers.
Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Well, personally, I share Patrick's six points, certainly supporting the approach four. From my jurisdiction, though, I think there are some mixed views. There are preparers who want amortization. But I do think, again, the comment about looking at what users want, because in the past when we did have amortization, we got the feedback that, well, users just ignore it, and so they make adjustments for it. So then the question would be, so what's the point of doing that? There are some who believe that not amortizing goodwill and effectively possibly having internally generated goodwill on your balance sheet is inconsistent. However, I think I can reconcile the differences in the sense that if you've had an acquisition, there's been a transaction and you've actually had an outflow of resources and you've acquired something, as opposed to simply just recognizing something that is internally generated. I think, you know, it's the same with other types of assets. So for me, I don't think that is necessarily a strong argument to say, as a result, we need to try and, you know, write off the goodwill that was purchased that sort of no longer exists. So I think, you know, improvements to the impairment model to make it, you know, easier to apply in practice certainly is the way to go. Just on some of the proposals, for example, looking at the calculation of the recoverable amount, just some things to consider. I can see just from, again, you know, past experiences of situations where the value and use calculations have been significantly higher than the fair value. And again, whether or not that is justified and if it is based on synergies and other things, I suppose the concern would be conceptually, well, why force one to simply use fair value if it can be demonstrated that the value in use is higher? So on the one hand, it might simplify things only having just one approach, yet I could see some possible unintended consequences where people are saying, well, you're forcing me to write this down, yet there actually is the value there. So that is something which I'd be cautious of. And I suppose, picking up on some of the other comments, and also I think we need to listen to users, is while, again, it might provide preparers with a bit of relief from doing the annual impairment test, you know, I think caution needs to, one needs to be careful, because if you're not forced to do an annual impairment test, it could result in, again, impairments being even, you know, being delayed even more, which doesn't achieve the objective, which I guess is why a lot of people are pushing for the amortization, to make sure that they're getting the write-off earlier. So, yeah, I do think one just needs to be careful whether or not it also might have some unintended consequences of not requiring it, but maybe some different approaches could be provided in doing some of the assessments. So, yeah, those are my comments.
You?
This is especially for Andreas, which is some research which was drawn to our attention, which came out of Germany. It was quite interesting. They concluded, just very, very briefly, the headlines, they concluded that goodwill in German DAX companies never been higher, at just under 250 billion euros, that the impairment rates have never been lower, at less than 0.4%. And their conclusion is, and it's their words, not my words, or our words, goodwill remains highly subjective, susceptible to permanent overestimation. To account for goodwill as an everlasting asset is to assume that every merger is a great success, whereas in the long term, perhaps 4 out of 5 are not. So is it, the numbers are very interesting. It's an academic piece of research, I think. That all said, I mean, I say I completely agree with what Patrick said. If we were to flip-flop, if you like, to a different approach now, I think it's extremely difficult message signalling-wise, having gone through all the due processes the board went through. I just think, though, that somehow, in the medium term, whatever that medium might be, we need to find a solution to this ballooning of balance sheets. I don't know what it is.
Unless it is a result of intangibles becoming increasingly important in the economy and being brought to the balance sheet because of takeovers.
Yeah.
That could be the reason.
Yeah, would be a reason then to consider fair value as well.
Well, I don't know.
Yes, fair value.
To me, the big conceptual question remains, if we know that synergy is a big part of goodwill, expected synergies, that's what you pay for. So you pay a lot of money for expected synergies. Is it right, as suppose you have a successful takeover and these synergies are coming in through your earnings, is it right to not amortize that part of goodwill that you paid for it? Aren't you double counting? That is the basic, that's my basic conceptual question that I have here. Isn't it obviously wrong to not amortize that part of goodwill? I don't know. I was hoping
that the synergies are running down on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Ian.
Well, if they're not coming, apart from the tempo in which you have to would want to amortize them, but if they are not coming in, you certainly have to impair the whole thing. But even if they are successful, isn't it clearly double counting to not amortize it?
Why is it different to a brand name?
Sorry.
Why is it different to a brand name? It might have an indefinite life. So you've kind of. You've already made that decision to move away from that model, so to go back, you've really got to have some good reasons. And I think if users are not telling you that that information is important, then, you know, all the arguments,
yeah,
there are no new
but
arguments.
But users also tell us that EBITDA is a fantastic measurement. Users can tell us anything. I mean, we also have our own conceptual responsibility. Philippe?
I share your view about amortization of the asset, which is in the goodwill, which represents synergies. The difficulty I would have is in practice that the pace at which they come to the company, we never know in advance, because they don't come suddenly at once. They come over time and maybe very often in a progressive way. You don't get the same synergies in your one as you get in your two. Sometimes it takes up to 5 years to achieve the full synergies. And they can be permanent or they can reduce, and that we don't really know. But the fact that they tend to come not really in the first year, but more in the second and more, we would have to find an impairment method which would match, in a way, the amount of synergies. So we would have some form of progressive amortization if we want to have an economic matching between the amount in the P&L.
Well, with
that could be culture.
But I understand that the amortization is highly subjective, whatever you do. But if what we now do is clearly wrong, then even a subjective amortization might be better than doing nothing. That's my big question.
No, of course.
But is it clearly wrong?
Yeah.
Well, that's what that's my question.
But that's all these arguments are not new arguments. These are exactly the same arguments that you had when you changed your methodology.
That's
so
right.
Well, I would like to hear a good explanation why what I say is clearly wrong. Or
there are
not now, but I can be convinced. But you know, this is. I think if what we do is conceptually clearly wrong, we should do something. Unless the practical reasons to not do it are overwhelmingly strong.
Hans, what are you supposing? You know, what kind of expense to for the synergy of, you know, the M&A? So you are, you know, talking about, you know, double counting. You know, what kind of expense are you supposing? You know, for the double counting.
Oh, that's a question too. I still need an answer to whether my
I think there is no, you know, double counting. You know, I think there is no double counting. You know, the some expenses to maintain the synergy is just the expense to maintain the current level of the, you know, synergy that comes from the asset, you know, the acquired from the you know, M&A transaction. So, you know, it's I think, you know, same as the, you know, the repairment of the, you know, the tangible asset, for example, the buildings. You know, the repairment will be made to maintain the current level of capacity of buildings. So the repairment charges is, you know, repairment expense is charged to profit or loss. And also the depreciation of, you know, the building is recognized to the profit and loss. In that case, you know, nobody says that the double counting is, nobody say about, you know, double counting of depreciation and repairment charges. So I think, you know, the maintaining the you know, synergy of, you know, some asset or a good deal, that is the same as, you know, the example I've heard about, you know, the repairment charges and, you know, depreciation.
What I said, I don't know if you understood me correctly. What I try to say is that non-amortization is double counting, not amortization. Non-amortization is double counting.
Okay. So I think, in addition to, you know,
do it in the positive.
You know, I made a comment, sixth comment on the amortization. Is it okay to make a, you know, three comments on impairment? I think, you know, the...
I give Patrick some time to...
thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, the ISB should consider how to improve the impairment testing, taking into account the logical consistency with how the good deal should be accounted for subsequently. For example, if the ISB decides to reintroduce amortization of goodwill, the annual impairment testing would be unnecessary because the cost of investment will be allocated over time anyway. On the other hand, if the ISB were to maintain the impairment-only approach, the following discussions will be inherently constrained in the impairment in the light of the need for robust requirement of impairment testing, so that the impairment losses will be recognized in a timely manner. In our discussion with the stakeholders in Japan, many believe that it would not solve a range of practical challenges identified by stakeholders. In addition, we understand the ISB staff's suggestion all relate to simplification of impairment testing. We think that the proposed simplification would even amplify the concerns of users and the regulators that impairment losses are recognized too late. And with respect to the intangible asset, we believe that accounting requirement of identification and the measurement of intangible assets have close connection with subsequent accounting of goodwill. Thus, if the ISB decide to reintroduce amortization of goodwill, we suggest the ISB consider whether there is a need for maintaining the category of intangible asset with indefinite useful lives that are not subject to amortization. In addition, we suggest the ISB consider an approach that would require an entity to identify and measure intangible assets to the extent that they are identified as the target asset in business combinations. In our view, such an approach would ensure the reliability of measurement and reduce the cost of measuring the intangible assets.
Jen Shao.
Thank you, Hess. Just a couple of comments. The first comment is that we believe that three topics raised, improving the impairment test, subsequent accounting for goodwill, and identification and measurement of intangible assets, they are close interactions. So we believe that those issues should be resolved together, not simply, you know, just a subsequent accounting for goodwill. It's not a simple issue. In China, people always, there are some concerns of subsequent accounting for goodwill, but at the initial recognition date, people always worry about that the goodwill may be overstated. The reason is that I mentioned before that some of the intangible assets may not be identified and recognized. And secondly, because of the fair value approach to account for, you know, acquisition cost, if the company are issuing equity and securities to, you know, to exchange the stocks and to control and entities, although we are using acquisition date fair value to fair value the cost, and then between announced date and acquisition date, there are long, there are several months, you know, and the stock price has been increasing dramatically. So in this case, maybe goodwill has been overstated. So the first solution we are thinking that maybe we should visit, you know, intangible assets accounting standards, business combination standards, and also IS, you know, 36 together to resolve issues. First, resolve the issues, initial recognition and measurement issues first, and then come to the next subsequent accounting for goodwill. With regard to subsequent goodwill, subsequent accounting for goodwill, yes, we discussed that. I think there are several issues. One is that whatever we take amortization approach or impairment only approach, we still need to do impairment test, even based on amortized approach. So I feel very good. We have raised several issues and how to, you know, improve the impairment test. I think whatever approach we are going to take, I think we need to do something. How to simplify the impairment test, you know, approach, whether annual test needed, or whether we need some kind of impairment indicator in place, and then go to the impairment test. And when we're doing impairment test, it's very difficult for companies, especially for regulators or for users. They are not sure whether value in use, the number of value in use is correct or not, reliable or not, because it's really based on the estimation of the management. And also it's very difficult, as we identified, that to estimate future cash flow, especially for a long time, more than 5 years or something like that. So in this case, I feel that simply say that maybe we, in some cases, we need to take some approach, fair value approach. If those companies, that the company acquired, the stock price has been, you know, depressed, and for a certain period, it seemed that there are no opportunity, or very low probability, for those price going up. So maybe we can take fair value approach, not to estimate the value in use, or even write off of the goodwill one time. So we need some kind of, you know, a solution
to simplify the impairment. Below book value.
yeah,
that does happen. I think that then it should be written off, all of it.
Yeah.
Obviously there is no value.
But in the standards, we need this kind of paragraph indicate that in which situation you can write off or something like that. Just a simple, or you in which situation you can use fair value approach or something like that. So to simplify the impairment test. And with regard to amortization approach, actually, before China introduced business combination standards, we're using amortized approach. And some of the preparers, actually, right now, they're still familiar with this approach. It's simple. For bookkeeping, it's simple. Some of the regulators also favor this kind of approach, because it's easier to be justify or something like that.
So what do they find easier, amortization or
amortize not? Because it's easier. Okay, it's too easy to check that it's right or not. But actually, some of the regulators, they don't think it's right way, because for regulators, they need to protect investment the investors, you know, interest, because users. In some cases, they think that it's useful because impairment-only approach. And they are currently familiar with this kind of approach since business combination standard has been introduced into China, you know, for almost 10 years. So in this case, I agree with the point made by Patrick that we needed to be careful. If we want to introduce amortized main approach again, we have to justify why we go to this approach, and whether amortization approach, the issues, you know, arising from amortization approach has been resolved, something like that. So in this case, I also agree with the points made by Patrick. We need to be quite cautious if we need, you know, to change the older one, the previous one. Yeah.
Jim?
Just quickly on the annual impairment test, we moved a few years ago, it was after the financial crisis, to a threshold that would say you have to do the quantitative calculation only if it is more likely than not. And we provided some indicators. So we used a nice threshold that conveys very well. But we view it as still an annual requirement. So you have to take stock annually, and you would consider how far, you know, how much headroom did you have during the last test? How did the general economy move? How did you move relative to that? So you still have to take stock annually.
But
at the same time period, but then to go to all of the detailed calculations, you only have to do that if you hit a likelihood threshold, and you could argue whether we've conveyed that well in more likely than not. But and so we think it's a hybrid between a full indicator approach and requiring detailed calculations each year.
Yeah.
And I was skeptical.
Sounds reasonable.
I was skeptical up front whether that would result in a cost savings, and there's been a lot of research done. Now, it also got done after the financial crisis, so you're in a generally improving economy, so we don't know how it would work on a downward declining economy.
But it did work?
That's the indicator, is at least in an upward, you know, in a generally improving economy, it took some of the cost and complexity out of the impairment model.
Almost 40% don't have to do the quantitative test,
going
from 20 up to close to 40.
Okay.
Now,
Yes, but Jim, but the problem of the goodwill impairment has ever been a problem in upward economies. It's always been a problem in downward economies.
Well, I understand. That's why
you are not really. I think we cannot say that it is solving the problem. It is maybe in certain conditions solving the making
that was
easier.
My point. I just wanted to be transparent that it had only been seen in an upward sloping.
I hope the U.S. will not have to test it in a downward economy. But if it happens, maybe. I had a comment about the good fair value approach for the goodwill. It seems to me that one of the problems, and we faced it in at least two situations already, when we had to decide on the valuation of non-controlling interest, and we had this option because the U.S. has a fair value option, well, not a requirement for the non-controlling interest, and we made it an option, and we tested it with users. There was very little support for the fair valuing the non-controlling interest from the users. People said, and we, for that reason, we wanted to stay converged, so we made it possible to adopt the US way, but we wanted it only an option. And the other problem we have is we have it at the moment with IFRS 13 and valuation of investments in subsidiaries when you have the P times Q question. Do we value P times Q or do we value a block of shares on a basis? And we are facing a big difficulty here. So all those ideas of fair valuing something which has a goodwill in it, I think it will be difficult.
I respect the Patrick, the comment. This debate is something like debating whether or not there is a God. So it never ends. existence, uncertainty about the God. However, I think we need some practical viewpoint. So question is whether or not our IFRS 3 has a fundamental flaw in the mechanism. And I think, I guess there might be some fundamental flaw. This is because some of the merger and acquisition is so much inflated. And if you sit back and look back our accounting in 10 years' time or 20 years' time, maybe there might be some fundamental flaw. Probably the flaw is the mechanism. The residual is calculated as the goodwill is calculated as a residual. So there is no incentive to find out what the goodwill is all about. If you look back the debate we had 10 years ago, we discussed what the goodwill is all about. And at that time, we said there is a core goodwill, which is synergy and going concern element. And everything else should be accounted differently. Say, for example, fair value of asset of acquiree, or fair value of intangible asset of acquiree, or otherwise overpayment. Currently, in current system, there is no mechanism to find out what's the amount of the overpayment. I think that is the fundamental flaw. And that is why acquirer put everything into the goodwill and wait for the first impairment test. But we don't know when the first impairment test comes. So maybe it will come after the CEO resigned. So that causes lots of overstatements. So we need to find out practical solution or to mitigate such kind of overstatement. So maybe, I think it's my personal opinion, but I think we have to introduce something like a self-policing mechanism. And I take the point Jim raised, some kind of one-day write-off mechanism should be introduced. I mean, if you cannot prove there is a synergy or going concern element which cannot be amortized, then everything else should be either finite life intangible or overpayment write-off on day one, something like that. We could go back to the basic idea of IFRS 3. That is the point of post-implementation review. Post-implementation review's point is whether or not the standard is working as we intended or not. So our intention of the standard was, if we read it carefully, we found out we should find out the core goodwill and put everything else into the right position. And that is, if that is the essence of the core standard, we could introduce some mechanism rather than keep debating whether or not we should amortize or not. That's my.
So you're asking companies to, when they do a takeover, to identify how much they overpaid?
Yeah.
And yeah. Do you think they will be able to find anything?
Yeah.
Which company is going to say, I overpaid?
I would like to put it the other way. So you have to find out what you bought. So is it finite life intangible asset? Or is it the going concern element? So if you buy the company who is located in a different place and a different tax rate, and then if you purchase it, and then you can move the head office into the other company country so that you can enjoy some lower tax rate. So this is related to something like going concern. So then you may be able to enjoy the tax benefit unless there is a tax change. So then in that case, amortizing it doesn't really make sense. However, if it's a synergy, say it could be kind of wasting asset. If that is the case, somehow you have to amortize or recognize impairment early. But the important thing is you have to prove the value of the asset you bought in the first place. And then if you cannot prove the value of the asset in the first place, everything else you have paid could be overpayment. So then if you introduce the kind of rebuttable presumption that everything else you can prove the value would be overpayment, then it could bring the rigor and change the attitude of the acquirer. And then that would make the behavior change of the acquirer. And I think it would work without changing significantly our IFRS 3. That is my personal view, but anyway, we can discuss it in future.
Okay. Looking. What we have.
Do we want to spend 10 minutes on intangibles? That's
yeah, let's have some fun with intangibles.
Well, maybe if we have a quick discussion on paper 5D. This was a paper on identifying intangible assets in the business combination. The staff considered four approaches in the paper. The first approach would be no change to the existing requirements, but consider clarifying certain areas or education material, particularly for contractual customer relationships. Approach two was to include some intangible assets in goodwill for cost-benefit reasons. The third approach was to remove the statement that the acquirer can always reliably measure the fair value of intangibles. And approach four was allow further grouping of intangible assets. Now, based on the initial discussions, we think the ISB seems more focused on approach one or two. In their related project, the FASB seems to be more focused either on no change or alternatively consider whether to include in goodwill non-competition agreements and customer-related intangibles that are not capable of being sold or licensed independently from other assets of the business. So do ASAP members have any comments on the approaches in paper 5D?
Yeah, I already commented on this point. I mean, I already said I would agree to lower the cost for recognizing several intangible, including goodwill figure, but this would open the debate about what we do with that goodwill. One point I think I could be tackled, and I think that is, I have a lot of concerns on it, is whether on separate recognition of intangibles, whether deferred tax liabilities should be recognized, because one of the problems is that recognizing deferred tax liabilities on intangibles, the counterbalance is to increase figure of goodwill that is not anymore representing the synergies part of the core goodwill, but this is a goodwill part of goodwill comes from accounting mismatch. So I think I know that is pretty much difficult to tackle this issue, because technically speaking, we should revisit
the IS-12, but I think that it has merits to be considered in this project, since it creates a lot of problems on, I heard from many preparers about it.
Jim?
So the reason we started with either a focus on node change or customer relationship tangibles and non-competes was our private company counsel, after extensive research, concluded that that was an appropriate option for non-public companies in the U.S. I don't think that the board is interested in non-compete agreements. That was maybe more specific to private companies and the cost relative to the benefit of valuing non-competes for non-public entities. At least some of us believe their conclusion on customer relationships, at least the non-contractual piece of a customer relationship, really struggle with, in some cases, why that meets the definition of an asset if it cannot be sold separate and apart from the enterprise as a whole. It's as much as a hoped-for future sale if you have no contract with a customer. So to say that that is part of a separate customer relationship asset if it can't be separated or sold separate from the entity, really struggle with why that is a separate intangible asset. And at least in U.S. practice, oftentimes people are including non-contractual customer transactions if they have data, and it gets as obscure as if you're transacting using credit cards versus a walk-in base, so that you have information about who your customers are, notwithstanding you have no more control over whether they make a future purchase in either circumstance. And so it seemed at least to be dealing with, at a conceptual level, do you really have a customer relationship asset if you don't control it?
A quick remark about the four approaches. Maybe there is a fifth one, which is not here, but would be needed if we were to follow tax recommendation, i.e. to reduce the residual and try to identify the reasons for why you have a goodwill. Then we will need to identify more intangible assets and put a value on it to get to a real residual that would be possibly written off. Which means that if I acquire a company, in order to penetrate more quickly a market, and I would base my development in that company, I may not have any asset in that company, but I have big hopes that commercial network will help me penetrate quicker this market. That is my strategic intent. I put big hopes on that. I would have to put a value on that hope, so-called synergies, a kind of synergies. Not really synergies because it's new, it's not with my existing business, but anyway. And that would create more intangibles to be identified, which is not totally the direction we're looking at the moment.
Well, you wonder if investors would place a lot of confidence if we called it what they were, hoped for future sales?
Yeah, well, you know, well, it's different. Is it different from goodwill? It's more trying to identify what you have in this goodwill.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we have for now exhausted the
the audience.
And well, let's see if we, in the end, we'll be able to prove that the goodwill does indeed exist. Thank you, Michelle. And then we, now that we have sufficiently tired you out, we are ready to approach the subject of insurance.